This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Wow, good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for December 8th, episode 1583. Today's show is brought to you by Horseware. Good morning, Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning. You never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Exciting, knowing that for the rest of my life, I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this Thursday morning. What, a couple of weeks before Christmas here, and we appreciate you being here. We got Mary Kitzmiller on here. Of course, she's here the second Thursday of every month for what seems like years now. Might be.
I know.
I don't know. It's been
like
a long time.
Been a year at least, right?
Yeah, definitely been a year, if not longer. So thank you so much, Mary, for doing this. We appreciate it. And I know the listeners love hearing your advice. And we try and donate this show as much to the listeners' questions as possible. But we always have some cool guests. And you have a cool one coming up on today's show.
I do. And I've had him on before. I have Bobby Kerr. And he's the guy, if you don't know his name, you've probably seen him on YouTube. He's the guy who's got a Mustang act, and the Mustangs actually sit in a car and drives it around the arena. And the reason I have him on today is he's actually at probably the biggest rodeo you're ever going to find. He's at the NFR in Las Vegas. And I believe this is his first year getting in as an act. And that's a huge, huge deal. And it's very Mustang-centric, very, very cool act. So thought we'd ask him some questions about what that's like.
That's cool. And, you know, one of these years I'm going to get to the NFR. It's on the bucket list. We're going to be able to afford to go out.
I went last year. It was awesome.
It's like
I lost
cowboy
so
heaven,
much money.
Isn't it? Cowboy heaven for you.
It is. It is. And I got hooked on penny slots, and I lost so much money on those things.
It's good you
if
weren't playing
I was
the dollar
Vegas,
slots.
Oh man, I was at least that smart. Well, if I lived in Vegas, I'd be homeless by now. I'd just be on the strip, not.
You know, with no money. You kind
of
have that addictive personality like I do. So I know
do.
That gambling, you know, I can do with, I don't drink, I, you know, don't smoke, don't do any of that stuff. But gambling, I know, is one thing that could be a vice. I just haven't let it be a vice. Because it, boy.
See, I don't understand that about self-discipline. Like that does, that has no meaning in my world.
Well, and then I always make sure, like, if we do go to Vegas, that if I'm going down, I carry cash and Jennifer gets my wallet. So, like, I can't take money out of the ATM. I just can blow what I've got in my pocket and that's it.
No, that wouldn't work for me. Because I go with the world's number one enabler, my mom.
Your mom.
And I'd give her my wallet and she would just use her wallet to get more money. That's pretty much what we did. And, I mean, you know, we didn't like have to mortgage the house or anything. It was fun. It was, and actually, you know, now that I think about it, that would have been a better training tip than I have, I have on the notes is, you can actually create that same kind of slot machine like effect in your horses to where they're wanting to do as much as they can to get that next reward. It's, we may have to talk about that. That'd be kind of cool.
All right. Very good. Well, I do have some daily winnies today, if you don't mind. I would like to do two of them.
Okay.
I would like to do a happy birthday. And now I'm looking for the birthday song. And of course, I can't find it. So we'll just do this. We'll just give them the party favors. I would like to do a happy birthday out to several people. My friend Shorty, who you know, Shorty, and it's her birthday today. Lisa Kelly, Ice Road Trucker, it's her birthday today. And of course, she's always so kind to us, and we really appreciate her being on the shows when we call. And Chelsea, who has visited us and stayed with us before here in Florida, one of our listeners from the Great White North, who has drives minis and has ponies. So happy birthday to Chelsea as well. So that's one daily Winnie. Now I got to do a second daily Winnie, and this one's for you. Okay, Mary, this daily Winnie comes from our friend Jerry, who's an auditor and a listener and who won the big prize on Radiothon Day, won the grand prize of $1,500 worth of stuff. And he announced yesterday that he's very generous, and he said, "The stuff I can't use, I'm donating to a local horse charity here." So,
oh, cool!
So Jerry's doing some good stuff, good things with the stuff he can't use. Jerry has like mammoth horses, like very large draft horses. But Jerry has been fascinated by you. You know, he picks on Jamie a little bit, and they go back and forth. They have this mutual, you know, love-hate relationship. And Jerry thought that Jamie was getting too much attention. So it was time to turn it to Mary. And he wrote a little song for you and put a lot of work into this. Matter of fact, it's been a month in the making since you were on the last time. And here it is. It's called Buy Me a Goat. So you can never say that nobody's ever written a song about for you, because now we have. Here we go. Takes a second to get started.
I ain't rich, but I damn sure wanna be. Working with my dogs and horses, tossing hay and feed. Wish I had a rich uncle that'd kick the bucket, and I'd be sitting on a pile like Warren Buffett. I know everybody says money can't buy happiness, but it can buy me a goat and all the stuff that I need to feed it. It can buy me an acre and a half with a rooster and a bunch of pullets. Yeah, I know what they say, money can't buy everything. Maybe so, but it can buy me a goat. They call me a redneck because I live up a holler. Well, I can change all that with some Cheetos and a Big Shot collar.
He knows you so well.
Oh my God, I love it.
McDonald's is the root of all evil, and you won't be happy with a big old burrito. Well, that just might be true, but it sure sounds pretty cool. I'm gonna buy me a goat and all the stuff that I need to feed it. I'm gonna buy me an acre and a half for my rooster and a bunch of pullets. Yeah, I know what they say, money can't buy everything. Maybe so, but it can buy me a goat. Float down by the water with my beer eyes down and the Powerball lotto sitting on a 100 mil. It can buy me a brand new milking chair. I'm gonna buy me a goat and all the stuff that I need to feed it. It's gonna buy me an acre and a half for my rooster and a bunch of pullets. Yeah, I know what they say, money can't buy everything. Maybe so, but it can buy me a goat. Yeah, I know what they say, Mary, you can't buy everything. Maybe so, but you can buy you a goat. It can buy you a goat.
There you go.
Okay, that is the most awesome thing ever.
He plays music too.
Oh, it's a good song too. I want to like borrow this and take baby goats top footage and edit a very cool supercut.
I will be sending it to you today, so you will have it for your use. It was meant specifically for you. He knows you so well. McDonald's, burritos. I mean, he got it all in there. Redneck in a holler. I didn't know you lived in a holler, but I guess you do now. So,
I'm in East Texas. It's about as holler as you can get.
I think he heard your story about your neighbors the one day, which is where that came from. So,
which crazy neighbors? I have several stories, like the one about the SWAT team that had to come out from Dallas and the Texas Rangers.
That's a new one. What happened there?
Oh, well, this is about as crazy as you can get. I was driving back from a horse expo in February, and people started writing me like, you know, can you guys get home? You know, have you seen the news? There was a crazy neighbor, not necessarily a next door neighbor, about a mile down the road. And they got into an altercation, and one shot the other in the face with a shotgun.
Oh.
The guy was okay. He was okay. He was released the same day.
How are you okay with you get shot in the face with a shotgun?
I don't know. But so, and then he barricaded himself in his house. And so SWAT had to come out and use one of their big armored vehicles to like mow over this chain link fence. So a sniper from the church roof, from the Baptist church roof, could take this guy out. Then they found his mother in a freezer later on.
Oh, that's your neighborhood?
That's not even the craziest story.
Merry Christmas,
but I'm not sure. If, right? Yeah.
Do you walk around armed in your farm? Because I would if I lived where you live.
Not on me all the time.
Maybe
but
you should.
Yeah, I mean, that's not even the best one. But you know, my ranch is awesome. You know, it's just this gorgeous, beautiful ranch with a bunch of crazy neighbors. When you live by a lake, things are going to be weird. That's what I've learned. And people, you know, I try to tell people about where I live and the weirdness, and they're like, oh, that's just the country. I'm like, no, you don't know. This is not normal country stuff. This is not normal country shenanigans.
There are certain parts of the country that are a little better than others. Like, we live in this quiet country retirement community, you know? So it's been pretty quiet in here, although we have lived in places where SWAT teams have showed up next door. So we have had that, helicopters and the whole thing. But never the mom in the freezer, never that. So that was a new one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, welcome to Texas,
glad I got
everybody.
To share that with you.
Thank you, Jerry, for doing that. That was neat. And
was awesome. That made my whole year.
I'll send it. You can put it to some footage of the goat and post it on the goat's Facebook page. That's a perfect one.
He learned a new trick yesterday. He can now twirl in addition to rearing up.
So, well, rearing up came naturally. Twirling has been taught.
Yes. I've got a routine in the works.
Oh, for your shows, you're going to bring the goat?
I don't know. Maybe America's Got Talent. I don't know. I don't know how big this is going to get, because he is a very special goat. He's got a lot of star power.
I wanted to tell everybody, too, that Mary's sound is cutting out a little bit, and we always have that problem with Mary because she lives in the country at the end of a holler. So we're lucky that we get her on at all. We can't even get her on the phone because there's, like, no reception. So we'll just put up with a little bit of you cutting out here and there. So we'll send that out to you. See, you were all worried because it was this thing going on in the auditor room that Jerry had something planned for Mary, and she was afraid that she was going to end up in tears, that Jerry was going to pick on her, but it was all good.
Oh, I'm very wary of surprises. They make me very nervous.
Oh, Jamie too. That's why I surprise her all the time. So
yeah.
I am the big brother you guys never wanted. So there you go. So that's what's up there. Now, did you hear the big news, too? You know, Leslie, who's from Horse Nation, that comes on Mondays. I think you might even have co-hosted when Leslie's been on. And she's all bubbly and fun. And a couple of weeks ago on the show, we joked with her because a story came up about the Mongol Derby. We joked with her about she would be the perfect one to do it because she's crazy. And this week on Monday, she surprised us all and said, you know what? I did it. I signed up. They called. We did the interview. I've been accepted as one of the 40. So she's going next year to the Mongol Derby. And then Jamie was like, well, I'm not getting left out. So she has now signed up. So we'll see if she gets accepted. I don't know. They only accept 40 and they get 400 applicants this year.
Wow. So that looks like a cool thing. That is my bucket list.
And sure. I was joking with her about eating bad food and, you know, all of that. And, you know, they don't have McDonald's in Mongolia on the route, right? So I think you're going to, and Cheetos are probably going to be hard to come by.
I don't know. You know, some of those big conglomerate companies really make their way around. You'd be surprised.
You're going to be living in a tent with the Mongolians who are eating goat. And I don't know where they get the goats. I don't know. That's a mystery where the goat meat comes from. But that's one thing you got to consider. You know, you have your goat and you're going to be eating goat. So, you know, that's one thing if you ever think about doing that. And everybody gets sick. Everybody gets violently ill on this trip. I don't know. Leslie's going to bring she has found a wine bra. So
I love it.
So she's going to be bringing wine in her bra or something stronger. That's the plan so far. So you have to think about that too, Mary, if you.
Well, my special tip for that, because it wasn't the Mongol Derby, but I did something equally crazy. Maybe 7 or 8 years ago, 2009. So 7 years ago, my mom and I actually went to India and rode motorcycles through the south of India on a 2-week tour. Yeah. And
first of all, I didn't even know you rode motorcycles, number one, but you rode motorcycles through, you and your mom rode motorcycles through India?
Well, and I was barely experienced. I got certified. I got my license just for this trip and I took my test on a moped. and then I went and rode a Honda, street bike through India. And you know, it's kind of the same thing there. It's not a if you get sick, it's when. But my mom and I were the only ones who didn't get sick because we took a shot of whiskey before and after every meal. And I don't know if that's
Leslie's going to love that one.
Well, and you know, similar to riding half wild Mongolian horses, when you are on a motorcycle driving on the left-hand side of the road with the craziest traffic in the known world, having a shot of whiskey in the morning makes it just loosens you up just enough.
Gives you enough bravery to get on that cycle
every
day.
Not freak out. Yes. Yes.
What was that like?
The roads. Oh, it was awesome. And the roads there, you know, at first the traffic seemed crazy, but then by the end of it, I couldn't believe why we had traffic lights over here because everything just flowed. Most of the roads were too narrow for if there was a truck or a bus and a car to fit. And then there's cows everywhere. Like we would be on a major kind of interstate and there's just a cow there and you just drive around them. And it was a lot of swerving off the road and getting back on the road. And they don't drive by sight so much as they drive by sound. So in busy traffic areas, you're hearing honking all the time. And you would think, oh, man, they're really angry to be in traffic. But it's actually what you use when you pull up to an intersection. You don't really stop and look both ways. You tap your horn a couple times and go. You don't stop. And, at first it's crazy, like you think you're going to die, but then after a while, it works, you know, everything flows. It was really cool. Probably craziest thing I've ever done. But it was awesome. I would love to go again.
What makes somebody go, I want to ride motorcycles in India for 2 weeks?
Where does
that come from?
It's actually kind of horse related because I was working at a reining barn and we had a bunch of people from all over the world at this reining barn in Oklahoma. And I worked with two guys from Israel and really cool guys. And they're required to serve some military time. I think it's 3 years for the guys and 2 for the girls or something like that. And when they're done doing that military stuff, they kind of want to, a lot of them want to go off grid for a while, like toss your cell phone away and take a trip and chill out. And the two places a lot of those guys go is South America and India, because I think it's, you know, it's relatively inexpensive. And this one guy I worked with had gone to India, and he just went over there for 6 months, bought a bike, a Royal Enfield. They still have this this old British motorcycle company, Royal Enfield, and they're really cool bikes. And he just disappeared into the Himalayas. And the pictures, now I didn't do that trip. I could have, but that's like on the side of a mountain, which I wasn't prepared for. And, but the pictures he had were just amazing. And so, I told my mom about it, and she started just kind of casually looking around, and we actually found this company run by a couple of Germans, that takes tours all over. They'll go through, like Ladakh and Tibet and India, all over India. And we went through the south because it was a little bit more beginner friendly, like beaches and less mountains.
That's crazy. What was the one thing that stands out from the trip for you?
Oh, man. You know, it's hard to choose one. There was that time we went crocodile watching. I don't remember if they were crocodiles or alligators. But we got in these little boats that I can describe the best as like small cereal bowls. They were like made of wood and like feed sacks and stuff, kind of shellac to the bottom. And we got in those and just went down this river with crocodiles. It's like a 13-foot would swim under us. And we're like, oh, cool. And taking pictures and, you know, ask the guys like, we're okay doing this, right? This is fine. He's like, oh yeah, these aren't man eaters. They're fine. I'm like, how would you know?
Yeah, did they have little tags on their head?
Yeah, how would you know this one to just pull some random guy off the riverbank yesterday?
And they have a barcode, they scan them. Oh, this one's okay.
Yeah, you feel invincible on vacation, which is really stupid. It's how people get hurt and killed, is you feel like, I'm on vacation, nothing's going to happen. And I kind of had a little bit of that bravado. Plus, you know, driving those bikes through insane traffic makes you a little brave. But then afterwards, when you start thinking about it, you're like, oh, that was probably not the best idea. So that was really fun. And, you know, I went to this temple where you could get blessed by an elephant. And bought a bunch of bananas to feed the elephant. But there was this really, really smart cow who was at the entrance. And this cow came up to me and looked like, you know, oh, man, I really like a banana. So I gave him a banana, which was a really bad idea because that cow had my number after that. I couldn't get away from it. I gave that cow half of my bananas for the elephant.
You were attacked. I went to India, and you know, we hear all these stories about, you know, women getting raped and all that stuff. I went to India and got attacked by a cow.
Exactly. Well, and parts of it that we went through were very, very rural, and they don't see Westerners. You know, where I stayed was in the beginning, it wasn't like touristy in the way like that Cancun is touristy, but there's a lot of Europeans out there. But we drove out and went to places where they just don't see Westerners. And I got a little taste of what it feels like to be like a celebrity because I signed autographs. I had my picture taken with a bunch of people. Yeah, it was crazy. We were at a temple and you'd all of a sudden see someone come up and start taking your picture and you're kind of like, what? And you look behind you and there's a whole bunch of a group of people standing behind you, like to get you in the picture.
That's funny. Well, yeah, that's not what we planned on talking about today, but I certainly didn't know that about you. That's a new one.
Wow. Yeah, I can't believe I've never told that story.
Well, do you want to get to, oh, by the way, Ken chimed in about the song. Audra said, love the song. Ken said, now Mary needs a new song, Mama in the Freezer. So look for that coming from Jerry soon.
I think Miranda Lambert should pin that one. Yeah, that sounds like it's up her alley.
It does sound like a country song, doesn't it? All right, let's get to, I guess we're going to start with your training tip. So you want to do that?
Yes. Okay, so this was inspired. I recently had a horse in training specifically with a trailer loading problem. I didn't even ride the horse. It was, I want this horse to not have trailer loading problems anymore. Initially, she wouldn't back out of the trailer got that fixed, and then she didn't want to get in the trailer. And it took me a little while to figure out why she had resistance, because it's different with every horse. It's not always that they just are scared about the certain aspect of trailer loading. You know, there's different reasons that they're resisting, and different things you can do to help them. And with this mare specifically, I noticed that she had a real aversion to coming forward off of halter pressure, which doesn't seem like a big deal. And it's something a lot of people, we really, really don't work on as often as we probably ought to. But if you can teach your horse to come forward when they feel that pressure of that halter behind their ears, you can help prevent a lot of issues, whether it's wanting to get in the trailer or it's standing tied. That's a really big one. So with this mare specifically, what would happen is she was fine to get her front 2 feet in the trailer. But a couple of times, I know it happened with me once or twice, and I know it's probably happened to her in the past, she would raise her head as she was backing out and bonk her head. And of course, that just really upset her because she was a really sensitive mare. So she had developed this habit of, she started to pull back in the trailer, and if I didn't loosen my grip on the rope and she felt that pressure behind her ears, she would go into straight up panic, rearing up, running backwards. And so instead of worrying about whether or not I could get her in the trailer, I actually had no problem getting her in the trailer. I worried more about getting that little spot of resistance out of her. So there's several ways you can do this. The simplest is I'll simply stand in front of my horse. I've got the halter lead rope in my hand, and I'll start kind of combing my hands down the rope. So I won't just pull on them outright. I'll just kind of gently comb my hands up and down the rope. And then I'll just slowly make my grip a little bit more firm and creating a little bit more pressure, just a little bit at a time. I don't want to induce too much panic. And what I'm looking for is for them to soften and even take a step forward. So if they kind of pull back or start going backwards, I just stay with them, keep that about that same amount of pressure, and I want to wait for them to come forward. And then as soon as they do, I give them a big release. I'll pet them, love on them. I might click and treat if that's what I'm doing. And you can't practice that enough, especially with this mare. It was such a deeply ingrained habit, and it was, you know, born out of so much fear and anxiety that it was hard for her to give up. But we made a huge amount of progress. And fixing that little spot made trailer loading a breeze, because then what I could do is I could walk up to the trailer, create that little pressure like I had done in the arena on that lead rope, and she knew come forward is the answer. And it just, you know, was a matter of her stepping on the trailer after that. And so, you know, that's why so many horses freak out when you tie them up, is they'll step back, feel that pressure, they don't know what to do about it, panic, and then they destroy their halter, they flip over. And so with those types of horses that have that sensitivity around their head, behind their ears, instead of, I want to teach them a new reaction of feeling that pressure. You're better off if you soften and come forward. That's where you're going to find your answer. So that's a really big one. Even if your horse doesn't have any specific problems, it's still worth working on with every single horse.
Very good.
And yeah, I think I'm totally on the same page with you there. There are so many serious problems we have, training blocks that we end up with, that the root cause is just what you said, that the horse feels pressure on his head and he has to throw his head straight up in the air because he panics about it. But there are so many things that relate back to that whole basics thing. Both Nigel and Scooter both had that issue when we got them, particularly Nigel. He was the rearer, and when it came to the horse trailer, and as soon as he felt any pressure on that halter, when he got near the trailer, he would go up. And of course, once he's inside the trailer and you go up, you hit your head in the roof of the trailer, and you just reinforce the whole thing. And it was two or three
weeks.
You
just proved that all his fears were right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. He just confirmed it all. It's going to hurt. And we had to fix that first. And there we go.
It's amazing. You know, I'm still kind of surprised when, like, I'll help someone with trailer loading. And this, once you make this flip, your whole world is going to change with horse training. Is we tend to get, I guess it's because we're kind of more predator-like, we tend to get this tunnel vision of, you won't get in the trailer, I want you on the trailer. And so I'd say the number one problem people have with trailer loading is actually thinking about wanting the horse to go in the trailer, which sounds weird, but I can't tell you, you know, I worked for a guy who had this brilliant trailer loading method, like this great system. He did demos all over the country, and he'd get the worst horses in the world to load in the trailer in an hour and a half. And, but I always had people show up at expos and clinics, and they're like, yeah, I bought that trailer loading DVD and it didn't work. I ran my horse in circles for half an hour and they wouldn't get in. I'm like, well, that wasn't exactly what was on the DVD. But I think where the breakdown is occurring is not that they're not doing the right steps. You know, they're holding their hand up in the certain way that they were instructed to. It's not that. It's that they don't understand what it's really about. And most of the time, I can intimidate any horse in the trailer. Not hard for you know, but if you find out where the spot is, I had a horse that wouldn't back out of the trailer. Actually, he wouldn't get on the trailer, and I could not figure it out because he always loaded great before. And what I figured out was, this trailer I had had a really high step up, and he had banged his shins a couple times getting on because this was a very small horse and he wasn't much of a jumper. So he would kind of try to step on, and he banged his shins up enough that he just, he's like, I can't get on. It's going to hurt. So what I realized for him was, if I was just, I took a little bit of extra time, 30 extra seconds to back the trailer up where there was an, you know, kind of just enough slope in the ground that wasn't a high step up, he would hop right in. And so, you know, we kind of get obsessed with, I want you in the trailer. But if you work on those little quirks here and there, like with this mare, spending some time in the arena, fixing that little issue, even though I'm not by a trailer, we're not getting in and out of the trailer 100 times a day, working on that spot. Then when I take her to the trailer, trailer's not a problem. Because now she knows that instead of panicking, there's a new thing to do that's going to help her.
Now, when you have a horse that has this type of an issue, one of the things that I found myself very prone to, and I suspect many others are as well, is you go immediately from working in the arena or round pen, working on teaching the horse to give to the pressure on the halter and step forward quietly. And then you immediately walk out to the horse trailer and expect it to all be perfect. There's lots of small incremental steps in there in between that are kind of useful too. Yes, you're going to do it in the round pen, and you're going to do it in the backyard, and you're going to do it at your neighbor's house. And you're going to take that little skill set and you're going to apply it to lots of other places that are new and different, but not necessarily fraught with adrenaline and negativity like the horse trailer is. You don't go from quiet, sedate, no distractions, round pen immediately to horse trailer. You're going to get in now. It's going to be magic.
Well, and immediately to horse trailer on the day we have to be at the show in 20 minutes because, oh my God, we're late.
Yeah.
You know, that, yes. and we forget, yes, about, and you might not realize that you might be trying to play, act like you're totally calm all you want, but these horses pick up on this. So you need to load them on days where, you know what, I've got 3 hours, let's play with this. And if you get 1 foot in, I'm happy with that. I'll put you back up, get you back out again. We'll get 2 feet in. It's a huge difference.
It took 3 or 4 days with Nigel, mm-hmm, of just taking that skill where he can give quietly and comfortably to pressure on his halter, like, oh yeah, I put my head down, that's cool. 3 or 4 days of just walking near the horse trailer, because if, mm-hmm, he was near the horse trailer and I did exactly the same thing, his rehearsed behavior was to go back to the old habit. So we had, mm-hmm, to keep getting closer and closer to the horse trailer, and he got to say, oh, I can safely do that. You're not going to force me and scare me into the horse trailer. I'm not going to hit my head on anything. Tiny little increments. And we made that mistake with Scooter when we were working with him, is we tried to take too big a step. We taught, right, him to move away from that pressure, and then just went straight over to the horse trailer. And of course it all fell apart, and we had to start again. So, baby
steps
there. You know
what? A great bridge between, you know, working in the arena and the horse trailer is, I found out, especially with this mare who had difficulty backing off a step-up trailer is pedestal work. And pedestal work, I find, it's a little bit different than doing the groundwork because it creates a little bit of pressure and urgency in the horse that kind of mimics working on the trailer because, and I didn't learn this until I actually went and worked with Tommy Turvey. The pedestal he had was really tall, you know, I don't know, like a foot and a half off the ground. And it was just small enough that a horse could not stand comfortably naturally square. They had to kind of smush their front feet and back feet together. So this took an incredible amount of precision, and you did not want the horse to step off the front of the pedestal. Because if they did, I mean, you wrap their legs and everything, but if they did, they could get kind of hung up on it. They could bang themselves. They could get a little hurt. So you have kind of this sense of urgency of getting the horse on, but they have to stop here. You know, you have to do it this way or else it's not going to work. And it creates just a little bit of pressure for them that the horse, they kind of, what I noticed with Guthrie when I took him to start working on the pedestal is, and he got kind of bullish and really pushy about it. He wanted to kind of mow over me and walk off the pedestal. And I had to kind of create a wall. Like, you will not do this. This is for your safety. You cannot do this. And he went through this spot of tenseness and pressure, but then he let it all down. He came out the other side. I could get him to perfectly step all 4 feet exactly where I wanted him and step off correctly so that he would be safe. After that, I noticed a huge change in him. And I've noticed that since with working with difficult to trailer horses is it creates just enough urgency and pressure that they kind of have to go through that and experience that. Of course, they're practicing stepping on this high up object, very similar to the trailer. And so that when you actually take them out to the trailer, they, to me, they feel a lot better prepared for it.
Well, that was a terrific answer. And I also figured out while listening to that, that's how you guys train us. In small increments.
Yes.
That is boyfriends
and
husbands.
Lots of pressure.
Lots of pressure, release, pressure, release. Because then every time we think we have hope that there's going to be something beyond horses, it comes back again. And it's just, it's pressure release all the time for 30 years with Jennifer and I. We're going to take a break for our sponsor. Our sponsor for this show is Horsewear, of course, and we have one of the, well, today we have a tip for you on layering in the cold weather, which I'm watching all of, I don't know about you, Mary, but I'm watching all of my Facebook friends post their snow pictures because it's like really cold up north. So let's have a chat about that, and then we're going to come back and answer some more questions, Mary. I love this question. This is one I'll have you tackle next. Is there a critical age at which it becomes much more difficult to train new things to a horse? So I thought that was an excellent question, actually. And we'll be right back. This winter grooming tip is brought to you by Horsewear Blankets. Joining us are two of the top grooms in the country of Enter Philip Dutton's groom, Emma Ford, and Kat Hill from World Class Grooming. Well, this week's Horsewear Winter Grooming Tip of the Week is brought to you by Kat. Kat, we're talking about blanketing for the busy work day. You start off in the morning, you make sure the horses have their blankets on, and then you go to work for 8 hours, and then it warms up. What do you do?
The key to keeping your horse comfortable all day is it's pretty simple. It's the same thing that you use, and that's layering. One heavyweight blanket that they wear all night and during the day can oftentimes get too hot during the middle of the day. And then especially if you're not coming back again till after dark, then they get chilled because they've gotten too hot in the middle of the day. Rambo has two amazing options for this. The first is their layering option where they have a liner that clips to a top layer. And the liner helps to regulate their body temperature more similarly to how their own coat works because you've got the two layers that breathe a little bit better than just one big heavy layer. And it also helps prevent the chill from taking hold if they've got warm in the middle of the day and then cooling down in the evening. The other one is Rambo has a product which is their Vera layer, which is one rug. It's super easy to use. You know, you just put on whatever weight they're going to wear all day, you put on in the morning. And right now, about 40 degrees in the morning and it's getting up to 60 degrees where we are during the day. And so my horse is wearing the midweight bare layer. And what that does is it actually is designed to act more like their own coat. So similar to how performance fleece works for people, it doesn't get too hot, but it also doesn't get, it also keeps them really nice and toasty. And that bare layer system helps horses self-regulate, similar to how their own hair works. So they stay a lot more comfortable through the day.
Great advice for a problem that everybody is familiar with and we all worry about when we go to work in the morning and don't get to see our horses till evening. And I'm glad they came up with a solution like that. Because short of having somebody come out at noon and take a layer off, that was the only option you had. Well, Kat, where can people find out more about you guys?
We're on the web at worldclassgrooming.com, and you can also find us on Facebook and Instagram if you look up the same thing, World Class Grooming. And we published a book, the best-selling horse book last year, and it's World Class Grooming for Competition Horses, and you can find it on our website or wherever horse books are sold.
And we have breaking news just in. Hold the presses. This week only, from October 14th through the 17th, you can get $100 off any Rambo turnout blanket, including the Vera layer that Kat talked about, the Rambo Duo, the Optimo, and the Original, the Supreme, and all the others in the Rambo turnout line. All you have to do is trade in your old turnout from any brand for a horse in need. Simply visit horseware.com/trade for more information and fill out the form for the voucher you will need to get your $100 off. That's from the 14th through the 17th. The complete list of retailers is on the website at horseware.com/trade as well. Open to U.S. and Canadian residents only. Go to horseware.com today and trade in that blanket that you currently have to a brand new Rambo and get $100 off on this weekend only from the 14th through the 17th. And obviously that was done last month. So, or 2 months ago. So you won't have that deal, but they still are doing their trade-in deal. And you can head over to horseware.com and check that out. And we appreciate them doing the tips. It was a whole lot of fun to have all of those tips over the last couple of months. And we thank Horseware for their support of Mary Kitzmiller's show. Cause, you know, Mary wouldn't be here unless she was getting support.
Exactly.
It takes more than just songs, right, Mary?
Exactly. Right. But songs are good. Keep them coming.
Yeah. Keep the songs coming. Next one is Mama in the Freezer. All right. So Lindsay Helmuth sent this one in. She said, my questions are, is it generally possible to teach most horses to do tricks, lying down specifically? And I like the second part of her question, actually. Is there a critical age at which it becomes more difficult to train new things to horses? And again, like we talked about earlier, this could apply to men as well.
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. I would say, barring any health issues or any kind of physical limitations that the horse has, you can teach him new things. It doesn't matter what age. I'd say that your number one issue with that being is if the horse has, over time, especially if the horse has been around, it's not uncommon for them to develop certain issues, whether it was the result of bad training or some sort of trauma. Those are the kinds of things that will interfere with your training and what you decide to teach them to do. Nothing's impossible, of course, but those are the kind of things that's going to impede on any kind of trick or new task. If I've got a horse that's had a severe, developed a severe habit of running off and escaping pressure that way, they've pulled the lead rope out of a lot of people's hands, then I have to tread very carefully teaching any kind of task or trick, especially one that involves a great deal of pressure. It can be done. It's just going to be harder than if the horse kind of came to you a fresh blank canvas, young, out of the pasture, hardly handled. Of course, that's probably your easiest scenario. If you've had a horse that's been minimally handled and what handle they have had has been, very responsible and good, that's going to be the best kind of working environment you're going to have with the horses. If they haven't had a chance to develop any bad habits or severe phobias or fears or anxiety. So that said, I find teaching tricks can be a great way to get a horse to let down. And I think in my case, the reason this is because when I teach a trick, I don't feel so urgent about things because, I mean, I'm not a circus performer. I'm not going to, you know, take any kind of act on the road. And so whether or not my horse smiles or shakes their head yes or no or gets on the pedestal is not quite as pressing to me as, like, can I ride him today? You know what I mean? And so so I find that I'm a lot more relaxed and I want the horse to enjoy doing tricks. So I let them take their time and kind of feel their way around learning how to do it. And so I think training tricks is kind of great cross training for a horse because it sort of breaks up the monotony of your normal sort of riding or groundwork routine. It really makes them use their mind because it's kind of a new and novel thing that you're teaching them. So, you know, I would say as far as critical age, there's not really a number I can throw out there because you're going to have better luck with a 7-year-old that's just been on pasture their whole lives, a ranch raised 7-year-old, than you are with a 2-year-old that's had some trauma. So it's really, it really depends on the horse's history. I'd say their history really affects more, affects the training more than an age number would.
Okay, very good.
You have to untrain stuff before you can start training stuff.
Exactly.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And, by the way, the age for men when they stop learning new things is about 12. So I just want to throw that out there. So, but you have a much better
Shortly
chance with your horse.
Potty training.
Chance with your horse, actually. All right. So let's talk to Claire or talk about Claire's question. My horse flips his head when we have a disagreement. You know, what's funny is my first pony I ever had, we bought at the auction for like $80, was going for meat. And that pony taught us to drive because Jennifer hadn't driven much and I had never done anything. This was earlier in our relationship. And every time we would do something wrong in the cart, that pony would flip its head. And when we'd experiment and when we finally get it right, the pony would stop flipping its head. So anyway, I'll continue with her question, but it was just funny that that pony taught us to drive by flipping its head and teaching us the way to do it right.
That's a great observation.
Well, it was right, Jennifer, right? Isn't that? We always knew when the pony was
oh, absolutely. Yeah. If we were screwing stuff up, that nose would fly.
Yep. And those, and you would keep playing around and we'd keep experimenting until we weren't doing it wrong anymore. And then the pony would do, you know, finally stop flipping its head and do its thing. Backing up, we could never figure out how to teach that pony to back up, and it was flip his head, and finally we figured out what the cue was that the Amish had taught it, and then no more flipping heads. But anyway, we'll continue with the question. My horse flips his head when we have a disagreement. Definitely not pain or tack related. For example, I use my leg to move his hindquarters on the trail, no reins, he flips his head. He doesn't do this all the time, just when he thinks we should be doing something else. The severity of it depends on how badly he wants to do the opposite of what I'm asking. If it matters, I ride him in a little S hackamore with a neoprene noseband. He's done it with a snaffle as well. How can I address these issues?
Well, I think there's some really interesting points that have been hit on both in this question and by what you brought up with your pony. To me, what I found out is what a horse does with their poll and their head and their neck is a great indication of what's going on in their body and in their mind. So we kind of go about it backwards. The horse flips his head up. Well, if I put this little tie down on him, he'll stop. Or, you know, if I put this bit on him, or I put a little martingale on him, or if I put him in some draw reins or whatever. And I've totally done this. I had a Morgan mare that she wasn't a head flipper so much, but was just very high headed. So we used all manner of training aid to try to put the head down. And I heard it explained best. I think Buck Brannaman said this, you know, something that's going on with a horse like that. He was talking about horses gaping their mouths and putting nosebands on them. But, you know, your horse is flipping its head and raising its head. And I know Claire's not doing this, but a lot of times I try to put a bunch of different stuff on and put that head down. sort of like if you're driving your car and the check engine light comes on, so you punch out the dash so the light breaks. Is the problem fixed? I mean, I can't see the light anymore, so it must be good.
Yeah, but it's so satisfying.
Or you could be like me and drive around with it like that for 7 years. But with horses, that's probably not a good idea. And so rather than the flipping the head being the problem, it's an indicator of something going on in the horse. And she says it's probably not pain or tack related. So we'll take out kind of physical issues, saddle fit. We'll just assume that's not an issue. It can always be, but we're just going to take that aside for now. I've found that it is usually has to do with a mental thing, anxiety. The horse is anxious, scared, frustrated, nervous, whatever, or something's going off in their feet. They've got a balance issue going off in the body. And I usually find it's a foot issue. And so I really work to gain more control of those feet. I make sure I can move their shoulders easily. I move their rib cage wherever I need to, move their hindquarters. I can move those feet anywhere. I can put them anywhere I want to put them. Usually, if I get that working really, really well, the head comes down and the head will lower to a level that's natural for the horse. And, you know, I've had people ask me for years, oh, how do you get your horse's head down? I'm like, I really don't. I don't have a day where I'm like, okay, today we're putting your head down. We're going to put a headset on you today. I used to do that, but I found when you work on their feet, the head lowers. It just happens. I could get a saddle bred to look like a Western pleasure horse kind of on accident. I actually have to tell them, okay, don't relax so much. Pick up your head. That looks weird. But when you talk about moving the hindquarters on the trail and he flips his head, what that tells me is you need to work on that more. So let's say we're on the trail, and I'm guessing in this horse's case that, you know, she says he does it when he thinks he ought to be doing something else. So let's say he's looking down the trail at a distraction, or his friend is back at the barn, or head on the trail, or you're near the barn and you want to move his hindquarters and he's flipping his head. I would take a little extra time and keep working on those hindquarters. Actually, I would work on this more at home in the arena, so it doesn't become such a huge issue on the trail. But I would get those hindquarters really loose to where you can rock them around 360 degrees easily, both directions, anytime you want. You can ask them to take 7 steps. You can ask them to take 1 step. You could ask them to take 1 step to the side with their hindquarters and then put that foot back. And I would just keep doing that until I saw them. You'll hit a point doing something like this with the hindquarters or any other body part where I'll keep asking and releasing when the horse does well. I'll keep asking and releasing when the horse does well. I'm not going to do anything to their head to try to, like, I'm not going to jerk on the reins or try to lower their head. I'm more concerned with, are your feet moving correctly? Are you responsive? Are you soft? And I just keep doing it over and over. Ask and release, ask and release, ask and release. You will hit a point, I can almost promise this, where your horse, you know, you'll be moving their hindquarters around. They might be doing it, but they're sort of tense. They're still flipping their head. You will hit a point. You do this enough. You do it correctly and softly without being, you know, don't force too much on them, where that horse will all of a sudden take a huge breath, drop their head, let out a big sigh, lick chew, lick chew, lick chew, lick chew. I've seen it a ton on the ground and under saddle. And sometimes it took 5 minutes. Sometimes it took 10, 20 minutes of, I'm going to ask you to move your hindquarters over here. Now move them over there. Now move them over here. You will see, without actually physically having to put your horse's head in a position, they will let down and lower their head. I do not know what's going on. I don't know if it's releasing some sort of dopamine reaction in them. I don't know, but for some reason, and I say this all the time, and I say it here every month, you work on their feet, you will make amazing changes in them. You'll get them softer, you'll get them relaxed, you'll get a better top line, and you'll make a huge mental change in them. And so again, I probably wouldn't, like with the trailer loading, I wouldn't wait till I'm on the trail to try to fix the problem, because you know, it can be too much for a horse. So I work on it hardcore in the arena so that when I go on the trail, it's a much more manageable problem. And it doesn't have to be hindquarters. You could do this with the shoulders. You could do this when asking them to back. You can ask them to go sideways. And as long as you release them for every little try and you just stay in there and commit the time to it, you'll see a big change in that head and neck. And I have not had the need for a nose band in a decade, because it just, my horses just don't flip their head. They don't get their tongue over the bit. They don't, you know, unless they already had an ingrained habit when I got them, they don't, you know, open their mouth or gape their mouth. And it's all because I concentrate hardcore on the feet. It matters less what's in their mouth or around their nose than what's going on with their feet.
Very good. Good answer. Let's see. I think we have time for one more before we, Jennifer's going to be getting our guest on here shortly. And you're making him get up early, Bobby. That's West Coast time. So you're making Bobby get out of bed this morning. I don't think people in Vegas get out of bed this early. So, but he's probably checking on the horses. So do you want to take the human training question, which I don't really understand? So that would be one we could take. Or do you want to deal with a horse that kicks and bites?
Ooh, which one's that one? I don't even remember that one.
So it's obvious you want the horse that kicks and bites. All right, so Stephanie sent this one in. What do you do with a horse that kicks and or bites and cow kicks? There's an OTTB at the rescue who's otherwise seems to be friendly, but when he's sniffing you, like he takes a nibble. That's just bad habit from where he was before. When he's being groomed, he picks up his hind leg. He kicked once before while sedated, and the owner had a broken tibia and two broken bones, actually. So we got a horse that kicks occasionally and a horse that takes a nibble. Now, she didn't say he, like, launches and attacks your face with it, you know, with his mouth, but takes a nibble.
So that's a really interesting one. And I would almost wager that there is something physical with that horse, and it might not be obvious, because it seems very specific of when he takes a kick. I saw a really profound change in a horse. I was actually, this was my very first clinic that I went to learn about clicker training. And we've actually had this guest on the show. The trainer was Alexandra Curlin. She's a fantastic trainer and she's really good at reading horses. And she showed us, before we started the clinic, she would show us a few video clips of horses doing different things. And one specifically that sticks out in my mind was there was this horse that had a problem backing up. It was in one of her clinics. She'd taken video of it, and this horse would back up a couple steps and then rear. And so, of course, your first instinct is always got, you know, a behavioral issue, and I need to do this and this and this to fix that. But then she showed us another clip of the horse moving around, and you could tell clearly he had some sort of stifle issue. There was some sort of hitch in his step, and it turned out this horse had a physical problem that was, he could not back up. I mean, physically, he could not. Not only was it painful, but he just couldn't do it. And so he would react by rearing. Well, at that clinic, there was this horse there, really cool horse, friendly horse. The owner had taught it some amazing things, neat, neat horse, but had a big problem with wanting to bite and being really grumpy during grooming. When she would brush behind the horse's elbow or when she tried to cinch the horse up, this horse was very irritated. So my first thought was ulcers, you know, because that can be a sign of ulcers. But Alex took a hold of the horse and did a little approach and retreat with the horse. And the horse had this kind of really big bubble around it, defensive bubble of don't touch me here. Anytime you went past the elbow, the horse was like, don't push me. Don't touch me. Don't cinch me up. And, you know, there was a time in my life where I would have reprimanded that horse, like, how dare you do that? You're not supposed to do that. But she just kind of went and would get a little further. And if the horse was quiet, she would, you know, reward it, click and treat, pet on it. And the horse just started to kind of let down the defenses a little bit, like, okay, this isn't so bad. And so that bubble, that big defensive bubble this horse had around its kind of whole midsection kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And she made her way back. This was a mare. She made her way back to the mare's udders and asked the owner, like, have you ever clean this mare's udders, which is something that you probably should do with the mare. We don't always think about it. We think more about geldings and cleaning sheaths, but mares need cleaned too. And what she found was this mare had a lot of irritation around her udders from fly bites and stuff. And as soon as that mare let her down there and she was able to kind of properly clean her out, that mare let down and was just like, oh my God, thank you. And it was a huge, huge change. So that's an issue just that this horse is reminding me of that I can call to mind, to where it wasn't this obvious health issue. Like, it wasn't clear that the horse was lame. The horse appeared healthy, probably didn't have problems with ulcers. You know, you never know, but until you get them scoped. But it was just something that I would not have thought about. I would have addressed the behavioral part of this horse. I would have done some training stuff, and maybe thought of any kind of physical or health things as an afterthought. And that was this mare's issue. So you may have, with this horse, you may have to do a little bit of investigating. You know, it could be something where you might want to get them checked for ulcers. This is just my gut is telling me that if he's otherwise pretty cool and he's got this thing about biting and cow kicking in specific situations, there's usually a physical thing going on. As far as kicking while sedated, that's not uncommon with certain types of sedation. The horses can react under sedation by kicking out. So certain types of sedation can actually cause that reaction in horses. Mean,
they're not quite in the right mind at that point, actually. So they don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
They're feeling weird.
I know Ace for sure can kind of cause a sort of, I'm very mindful walking around a horse that's been sedated with Ace, you know, whether it's by the vet or whatever, you know, with kicking.
Videos of the kids coming out of the dentist office after they've been sedated and the weird things, right? I mean, right? Same thing, right?
Exactly. Yeah. They just, you don't, you know, they, different kind of medications have different effects. So kicking under sedation, sometimes it's just a sedation thing. But I would do a little bit of investigating. You know, you may want to talk to your vet about things that could be causing it. You may want to look into having some body work done. And you're going to have to be a bit of a detective, because it could be anywhere and it could be in an unexpected place.
Well, Jennifer's having a little bit of trouble getting a hold of Bobby right now. So I don't know if he's maybe not getting good reception in the barn. That happens sometimes when they're out in Vegas in those hotel barns. So why don't we do a song? And then if we come back and he's not here, I have one that's causing a final question for you that's causing a stir on our auditor page. And that's about self-confidence in a horse and how do you get their confidence back? And a number of people are having that issue. So why don't we hear from Bren Hill? We have Christmas for Cowboys, and we'll be right back.
Tall in the saddle, we spend Christmas Day driving cattle over snow-covered plains. All of the good gifts given today, ours is the sky, the wide open plains. A campfire for warmth, we stop for the night, stars overhead, Christmas tree lights. The wind sings a hymn as we bow down to pray. Christmas for cowboys and wide open plains. Back in the city, they have different ways. Ball and eggnog and Christmas parades. I'll take the blanket, I'll take the reins. Christmas for cowboys and wide open plains. Spend Christmas Day driving cattle over snow-covered plains. All of the good gifts. are given today. Ours is the sky and the wide open plains.
Well, that was Bren Hill. You can find all his music. Just go to iTunes and search for Bren Hill. Do you know Bren Hill? Have you ever met him?
I do not.
Yeah.
That was a nice song.
Yeah, he has some great music, actually. So check him out. We had him on the show 5 years ago, maybe. I mean, it's been a long time with some of these musicians. We have to get them back. It's been so long since we've had them on. Well, now let's go to Ken's question and ask, what kind of program do you use for spooky or horses with no self-confidence? And then Celeste added it. This is really great one, working with one right now that is very low confidence, and it's been a great learning, though sometimes frustrating experience. And then Chantel threw in, with Ken, we bought a pony this fall, and she has very little self-confidence. So there, self-confidence seems to be the question of the day.
That is a good one. And it goes, you know, the Mustang mare I'm working with for Mustang Magic actually has an enormous issue with confidence. You know, I've talked to a few people about her saying, man, she's really tough. And they're like, oh, is she crazy? Is she an outlaw? Not at all. She's the sweetest horse in the world, but, really having a difficult time getting over that hump of, she knows what she ought to do and she tries very hard, but she just can't help being scared. You know, she just can't help it. And, it's like me being afraid of the dark at my age. It's just not going to go away anytime soon. And, so that's a really tricky one, because I find horses like this, desensitizing them does help. You know, your typical groundwork programs do help, but some horses, just that severe phobia remains. And it could have been due to past trauma, or it could just be how they are. You know, they're all different, just like people. So, you know I harp on about it all the time, about how much I love clicker training, but this is one of those areas where if I'm doing, you know, all the things I should be doing groundwork wise, all the things I should be doing under saddle, and I'm just not making a dent, the clicker training tends to really break through, cut through all that fear. It made a huge difference in my horse Guthrie. You know, a lot of people see Guthrie, the videos and photos and updates I've posted about him over the years, and they see this just big, happy go lucky goober of a horse that just does anything. But for several months, he was not that way at all. He was very terrified. I would go into a stall every day for weeks, and he acted like he had no idea who I was, difficult to catch in a stall. And so I started a clicker training program with him. And I didn't just take him up to the scariest thing I could find and try and click and treat when he would get near it, because that just doesn't work. You know, I started with mundane things like the halter lead rope or a brush, you know, and then I built, you know, I piqued his curiosity on very mundane things and very simple tasks. You know, can you walk over this ground pole? And rewarded him and clicked him and treated. And something about that, using that bridge signal and a food reward, which is, again, I've always said it, a very powerful motivator. It really turns on a light in these horses, and it keeps them from getting shut down. And when you flip that switch and they're kind of in that, I've talked about it before, the seeking mode of what can I look at now? You know, what can I touch now? And, then you can start gently upping, the criteria on what you introduce them to where by the time you finally pull that scary tarp out that they used to spook at every single day for years, it's not a big deal. And this actually happened with Guthrie. He was terrified of tarps. I had this pallet of feed that was tarped down that he had to walk by every day, and every day he'd freak out at it. Well, it just so happened I had a demo coming up in like a few weeks showing clicker training. And I thought, you know what? I think it would be great to show in this demo how fearful this horse is with tarps and how I can get him over tarps using that bridge signal and food reward. So I specifically did not work on tarps with this horse because I wanted to have that residual, like, oh my gosh, I'm terrified of this. And because he was going to be the horse I showcased in my demo. So I worked on other things, other obstacles, bridges, and going through things and around barrels and over ground poles. And I kept tarps out of the picture because I wanted to have something in the demo that he would clearly not like, and then I could show how he'd get over that aversion. Well, it didn't work out that way because I had him in my demo. I was showing some stuff and I brought out the big scary tarp, put it on the ground, turned around to talk to people, turned back around, and it's in his mouth. He was carrying it around the round pen. So even though I didn't specifically get, yeah. And I was like, well, you just ruined, that was supposed to be 30 minutes of discussion. And I was supposed to show how you were clearly fearful of it. So what the change that it made in that horse is, you know, when I take him to obstacle courses now, I have to pull him away from things. No, don't pick the flowers up out of that jump standard. No, don't chew on the rope on that gate. No, don't walk on the bridge. No, we're going this way. Quit taking me over to the bridge or the tarp. And it's kind of a nice problem to have, you know, like, I'd rather you do what I ask, but I like that I have to pull my horse away from obstacles that are usually terrifying, you know, and it could be a different color, different place, something he's never seen before. He wants to go scope it out because instead of saying, you must do this, I'm going to force you on this, I can get any horse to go into any situation. I can make a horse get in the trailer. I can make a horse get on the tarp. And I try to do it that way for a long time. And then I realized that that doesn't take care of the fear. I would get a horse to cross a tarp a million times at home, but then I'd move that horse, that tarp across the arena, or if it was a different color tarp, or it was a tarp at a show instead of at home, we'd have to start all over again. It was so frustrating. And I found that changing motivation, changing how I approach it made a big difference in that horse. And instead of them looking at something and being, oh my gosh, I'm terrified of that, I don't want to do that, instead of that, you get them to look across the arena and say, oh, what's that billboard over there? I want to go touch that. Can we go over there and check it out? And I find the clicker training has really been a big help with that.
So Glenn,
yes.
Yesterday and the day before, when you led Scooter from the arena gate across our concrete pad to his paddock, what did he do when he got to the weird, strange, scary object that he saw sitting next to our house?
Oh, he always goes investigates.
See, that's because we've been doing that clicker training. So now anytime Fruity Spooky Scooter, who used to bolt at everything, whenever he sees something that's genuinely out of place, in this case, it was a big black tub full of garbage. It was empty soda cans and shiny weird stuff and paper. He will drag you over and fuss around in it, hoping that perhaps that's going to get a cookie.
Yep. Everything now might be rewarded with a treat. So it does
work. He has to go see it.
I mean, he doesn't shy away now. He goes towards it, actually. It's just the
it's genuinely something that, you know, he's concerned about because his ears are pricked and his eyeballs are giant and he's snorting, but he must go see it.
And again, that, you know, like, you don't want him to drag you to the bag of trash, but it's like, wow, that's kind of different for a typical prey animal. And it's about so much more than the food, because plenty of us have tried to get a horse in a trailer by shaking a can of grain. If they're really, truly scared. Huh?
That's shaking a can of grain and clicker training aren't the same at all.
Yes. One is bribery. And you know, so you may think, well, you're bribing them with food to get them to go over. We all know that doesn't work. And so it's about so much more than that. And, you know, like you saying he dragging you over to something new, I found with my horses, I had to actually change the rules of how I approach obstacles to, I do not allow you to put something in your mouth, like an obstacle, unless I'm specifically asking you to pick something up. You know, like I've taught a few of my horses to fetch things, because what ends up happening is you go through your trail course and your horse is pulling flowers out of all of the obstacles. So I actually have to think about this ahead of time. Like, you're not allowed to bite things. I don't want you to bite down on that tarp. Because you will get a horse that is like, I want to paw this. I want to bite it. I want to roll in it. I want to drag it across the arena. And so, you know, I don't just use clicker training. I use an integrated approach, and I know there's wonderful groundwork programs out there, and I've tried a lot of them, and they're really great to get horses over so many issues. But every so often you get a horse that you've done all the things you ought to be doing, and they just can't let down. And I find that's where that clicker training comes in and fills in those little pockets and holes.
Very good. Let's see here. We have a couple questions here about, ironically enough, about self-confidence in riders too. I know Rosie has sent one of those in. I want to hold off on those until next Wednesday. Jamie's off, and we have a special co-host coming on, and that's Tanya Johnston, who is a mental skills coach. That's what she does for a living. So she's going to be filling in for Jamie, and we're going to be taking some listener questions about the mental side of riding. So let's hold off on those. Do you want to take, we have time for one more, if you want to take one more.
Let's do it.
Which one do you want to take here? There's a few left.
Let me look.
How about this one? How do you desensitize your horses? And that's such a broad question that maybe we don't have time for that. But maybe you can start on that answer.
I'll start on that, and you ring a buzzer.
I like this better. How do you not desensitize them?
Ooh, and we've actually had some.
There's so many people doing it wrong.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, the two go hand in hand, and I've been through this. And again, if I go on too long, just hit a buzzer, and I will stop. But this is kind of very very interesting issue for me, because I went through this. I've wrestled with this my entire. Oh, really?
I'm just kidding.
Not yet. I've wrestled with this my whole career, because the first program that I learned when I started training professionally was very desensitization heavy. I mean, I could have blown off fireworks under my horse and they wouldn't have moved. I got them that quiet. And that was good in the beginning, because I was an idiot and I tended to hit the ground a lot. So I needed a horse that was going to take care of me. I needed him kind of bomb-proof. But then when I started getting more interested in performance horses and horses that needed to be alert, you know, when that cow moves an inch, they're ready to, you know, get on that cow. Or if I change my rein, if I move my rein a quarter inch across your neck, you've got to go right into that spin. I found it a heavy desensitization program didn't work, as it wasn't fair to those horses for me to demand that they be dead to the world. And then a month later, they need to be sensitive to everything. So it's a really difficult balance to maintain. You don't want to fall off and hit the ground all the time, but you need you don't want to take the life out of your horse either. So, you know, when desensitizing my horses, I try to avoid as much as I can what's known as flooding, which is simply just you sort of attack the horse with an object. Like, you just flap that bag 100 million times. And if they run, you stay in there with them until they just stop moving and release. It is a tool I have used in extreme situations, but for the most part, what you're creating in your horse by desensitizing them that way, is a state of learned helplessness where they just shut down. It doesn't mean you've erased any kind of fear or feelings they have about the object, but they just see no better alternative than to just shut down. And every horse, you can bring them to that point. And so it's something I really try to avoid, except in just extreme situations where the horse is just being very dangerous and there needs to be a breakthrough in some way. So what I do is I'll introduce them to something that I think they can handle, something I don't think is going to cause their feet to move very much. And I will use approach and retreat. So, you know, like I usually start with my hands. I'll just go up to horse and start rubbing on them, and I'll pick an area, especially if it's like a Mustang, it's never been touched. I'll pick an area where I think they're going to allow me to get in and start touching on them and petting on them. I try to make it pleasant. If they move, I stay with them. I don't increase, like, you know, I don't increase the pressure I'm using to pet all over them. I just kind of go with them. I stay at their shoulder. I keep their nose tipped toward me so that if they spook, their hindquarters are more likely to go away from me rather than toward me. And then when they let down, I release. I might walk away. I might click and treat if that's what I'm doing at that moment in time. So there is going to be a little bit of uncomfort in the horse. I feel they have to go through that little stress and discomfort and realize they're going to be okay. But I don't want to take it into the territory of, I'm going to take the scariest thing and overwhelm you with it till you give up. I don't want that to happen. So I start with my hands. Usually that's where I need to be. That's usually something most horses can put up with. And then I move to the lead rope. I don't just throw the lead rope at them like crazy. A lot of horses don't react very badly to me throwing a lead rope at them, but I know specifically with Mustangs, what I do to give an example is I'll kind of fold the lead rope in half in my hand, and I've just spent a long time rubbing all over this horse with my hands. Well, now I've just added something to it. That's just a little bit more, but not too much. Now I've got a lead rope in my hands. I'm going to rub you with my hand and the lead rope. And then I'll just sort of work that lead rope over their back. I like to start with their withers and back first. That's usually a very doable area for them before I move on to areas like their neck, their hindquarters, their feet. And then I just do what I call snaking the lead rope over their back. This is something I learned from Chris Cox. You can check out his stuff and actually see examples of him doing this, where instead of just throwing the lead rope over, I just kind of lift it up and slide it down. And again, it's something that creates just a little bit more stress, a little bit more pressure, but not so much that the horse is just going to go screaming backwards. And, you know, I just take that process on and on and on and on, introduce new tools like the flag or like a stock whip if I'm so inclined. And another point I want to make is I don't just do this all at once and I don't do it for hours. That doesn't seem to make a big dent as how often you do it and when you do it. So if I've just got a horse out in the round pen, I haven't worked them in 3 days, it's 30 degrees out and they're blowing fire, might not be a good time to desensitize and ask them to stay still and be relaxed. I might need to move their feet a little. So I pepper that desensitizing throughout the whole lesson. And I find if you do it that way, especially like if you've just worked your horse, they're a little tired, they need a break to catch their air, that is a great time to do some light desensitizing. Not so much that you wig them out, but then what that horse is going to start doing is, oh man, here comes desensitizing. This is awesome. I get a break. I get to chill out and relax. They'll actually start to look forward to it and crave it.
Very good. All right. I think that's going to be all we have time for today. Thank you so much, Mary. This was basically a Mary clinic this morning.
It was.
You would have to pay $1,000 for, and you got it for free.
Exactly.
So there you go. Perfect. And we're sorry about the guest. I assume that we have a crossover. Usually it's a time, figuring out the time issue, or who knows? He's in Vegas. He might have had a long night. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm bummed we missed out on Bobby, but it's usually like it's a time issue. We've got you on the East Coast. I'm in the middle of the country. He's over on the West.
They usually get back to us after and go, oh, I thought it was a different time, or they've had a horse issue. That's the other thing. It's usually, you know, considering the number of guests that we have every week on the shows, which now is totaling over 6,300, when you consider that, we could probably count, there's probably less than 25 or 30 that we've ever had just not show up. You know, and considering that we deal in the horse world where people have issues all the time, that's a pretty good number. So when it does occasionally happen, it's okay. And Mary, besides, Mary got to help you all with your questions.
I'm happy it was a me-centric show. I don't think there's enough
that's her favorite kind, actually. That's her favorite kind of show.
I had a song about me. This is great.
Yeah, you did. You had a song, all kinds of stuff.
More about, yeah.
If you tuned in late live, go back and listen to the recorded version of the beginning of the show to one of the Daily Winnies was for Mary's song, and you have to hear it. And I'm sure we'll be hearing it again on the show sometime soon.
That'll probably be my new theme song.
Yeah, that's it. We'll have to make that your new theme song. That's kind of long for a theme song, but I'll take a part out of it. Sure. The part about McDonald's and junk food. I'll take
that. That's
part.
Like the top thing, though. That's quintessential me.
It is. It is so funny when I see your pictures around the farm. And all, if you look carefully in the background, you'll see bags of chips and Doritos and... And, you know, people who think that we joke about that, because Jamie, you know, is, of course, a Miss Vegan and, you know, eats everything, whatever. And then you're the exact opposite.
I'm like a garbage disposal, pretty much.
I don't think I've ever seen you eat a vegetable. And I've eaten meals with you. I don't think I've ever seen you eat a vegetable.
I have onions on my cheeseburger or blooming onions. I've eaten a whole blooming onion. That's
if it's fried, you will eat it.
That's right.
All right. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. We really appreciate it. Tomorrow is Friday. And Jennifer, we need some really bad ads. We need a couple more, right?
We do. We need more ads.
All right. More really bad ads. Get them in. Gemma, if you have time, please read one for us. You're always the funniest at reading really bad ads. And that reminds me, if you read your own, just record it on your phone and send it to us. Email it to Jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. We give you double the points for the prizes. And that's what the other thing we have to talk about that's very important today, Mary, is you have stuff for sale for Christmas, right?
I do. I've been playing
that
with my
sign
new machine.
You made, oh my God. Well, ours. We'll talk about that in a second. But the sign, the Merry Christmas sign you made with the gray, oh my gosh, that was beautiful.
Oh yeah. And you know, I can do custom work, which you know, I'm
which you
I'm
did for us.
To...
She made our logo into a sign. Now, how big is the logo sign? We had already had a winner of that. I think Nicole Lutz won one.
I will have to measure it. It's like 18 inches by, it's like 18 by 16, something like that.
That's pretty big. And so, yeah, we're giving one of those away for really bad ads this month. So you can be only the second one. Nicole got the first one. She got it for being the premier entry into the Radiothon. We played her song at the beginning of the Radiothon. Her entry in the beginning of Radiothon. So she won one, and then we're giving one away to a listener this month who submits a really bad ad. If they get picked, they get one of those. And then also, I'm getting one for my studio because it's so cool.
If you want any inspiration for really bad ads, I suggest you venture on any of the Texas for sale groups. I could have won this contest like a million times by now.
You need to start submitting.
I know. Well, I'll just do it just for fun. I won't get points or anything.
All right. But because you made the sign, you probably don't want to win one. Now, you have other stuff, though, in the store for sale still, or have you run out of everything totally now?
No, I'm adding new things daily. We're still kind of in play mode with the machine, just seeing what we can do. So I'm adding new designs daily. Again, I can do custom if you've got a farm or ranch logo brand, you want a cool ranch sign, you know, hit me up, talk to me. I'll see what we can work out. I can work with your logo. I can come up with something myself. I'm pretty handy with the design part of it. We've got an Etsy shop. You can hit me up on my Facebook page and find me there and we can talk about it.
All right. Very good. Can they also contact you through MaryKitzmiller.com?
Yes, they can.
All right, you forgot your own website. Most people do. That's why I have to bring it up. And so MaryKitzmiller.com or go to her Facebook page at Mary Kay Kitzmiller and you'll find her there. And you can get your custom orders in. And thank you so much for doing the signs. They were really cool.
I had a lot of fun. They were great.
They're really neat. And we'll make sure that we pick a winner. Now, the other prize that we have, and I don't know if you saw these, but the little mugs with the horses, the little cocoa mugs.
Those are adorable. adorable.
That's one of our listeners, Allison, and she has done such a good job with those. She made that as a giveaway for this month. And if you haven't seen it, just go. Actually, if you go to my Facebook page today, I put it up as my profile picture. It is the cutest thing ever. And we're giving that away as one of the other prizes this month for Really Bad Ads. And I'm telling you, she made it specifically for us. It's a little HRN mug. And there's a horse that is coming out of the cocoa. It looks like he's drank too much. And there's another one trying to get in. It is the cutest thing ever. And we didn't know she was doing it. She just sent it over to me. So it was so cute. And we'll be giving that away to one of the winners too. There's so many talented people in our audience.
Well, that's because they're better than everybody else.
Yeah, better than that's correct. Better than us, actually. So
yes, this is true.
I can't sing like Jerry does, that's for sure. Thank you all. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Merry Christmas to you, Mary, and have a wonderful holiday down there. I hope it's SWAT free.
Me too. Yeah, we will see.
And your mom is accounted for, right? She's up and about.
Oh, yes.
Okay, good.
Oh, yes,
just checking. Sure. After your stories, I have to worry. All right. Thanks, everybody. See ya.